ते वासुदेवाय।
Translation: Lord Brahma, the master of the entire universe, arrived there accompanied by all the demigods and their chiefs. Seeing the lines of Lord Vishnu's palm on King Prithu's right hand and impressions of lotus flowers on the soles of his feet, Lord Brahma could understand that King Prithu was a partial representation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one whose palm bears the sign of a disc, as well as other such lines, should be considered a partial representation or incarnation of the Supreme Lord. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. There is a system by which one can detect an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Nowadays, it has become a cheap fashion to accept any rascal as an incarnation of God. But from this incident, we can see that Lord Brahma personally examined the hands and feet of King Prithu for specific signs. In their prophecies, the learned sages and Brahmanas accepted Prithu Maharaj as a plenary expansion of the Lord. During the presence of Lord Krishna, however, a king declared himself Vasudev, and Lord Krishna killed him. Before accepting someone as an incarnation of God, one should verify his identity according to the symptoms mentioned in the Shastras. Without these symptoms, the pretender is subject to be killed by the authorities for pretending to be an incarnation of God. So, Krishna has his divine form, and that divine form of Krishna has certain specific signs and marks by which one can recognize him. And like when Akrura went to Vrindavan, he saw the marks of flag, thunder, lotus. Wherever Krishna stepped, Krishna's footsteps were marked on the sand. Akrura could see that these specific marks also were there, and that's how he could recognize that those were Krishna's footsteps. So this is how a devotee, especially a person who has the understanding of the scripture, recognizes the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And when a Lord appears also, he may appear in different other forms, but the signs of the Supreme Personality of Godhead also become manifest in those forms. So, although Prithu Maharaj is a Shaktavesh incarnation, but still in Prithu Maharaj's person, Krishna's qualities, Krishna's signs or marks have been manifest. This is a very peculiar characteristic that Lord's devotees become induced by not only by his qualities but also by his features. Sometimes devotees take up different features of Krishna, and that happens very naturally. Like Draupadi, Pandava's wife, was a great devotee of Krishna, and her complexion was like Krishna. That's why her name also was Krishna, not Krishna. Actually, name of Krishna is ends with a short A and Draupadi's name ends with a long A. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and Krishna is the lady who has the complexion like that of Krishna. So this way devotees become endowed with different features and characteristics of Krishna. Like Uddhava's feature was just like Krishna's features. Uddhava looked just like Krishna. So when Krishna sent Uddhava to Vrindavan to console the gopis, from a distance gopis thought that Krishna was coming. But when he came close, then they could recognize that this was not Krishna. One kind of liberation is called Sharupa Mukti. Sharupa, Rup means the form, and Sharupa means the same form. A devotee in that kind of liberation develops the same form as Krishna's. Many devotees in Vaikuntha have achieved Sharupa Mukti, and their form is just like Krishna's form. Not Krishna's, but Narayan's form. So here also you can see Prithu Maharaj displayed different signs of Krishna's palms, the signs that are present in Krishna's palms and Krishna's lotus feet. So this is how Brahma could recognize that Prithu Maharaj is an incarnation. Sometimes a great personalities display different qualities of Krishna, or it's called Mahapurusha Lakshanam. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's grandfather Nilambar Chakravarti could recognize Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by seeing some signs in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's person. Garga Muni recognized Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead when he went to see him during his name-giving ceremony in Nanda Maharaj's house. And so other great personalities also display such qualities. Like one of the qualities, as I mentioned earlier, of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is that his arms were long up to his knees. Ajanu lombito bhujau. His arms were long up to his knees. Now an ordinary person doesn't have his arms as long as his up to his knees. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's hands were long up to his knees. And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's arms were also up to his knees. Ajanu lambito bhujau. So as we develop Krishna consciousness, we also develop qualities like that of Krishna. Those qualities may be internal or external. External quality is the form, and internal quality is the nature, the characteristics. So both can develop in the person of a devotee. And Prabhupada in this purport has warned us or pointed out that how nowadays some rascals are being recognized as the incarnations of the Lord. They have nothing to do with the Lord. They are actually demons. They are God's competitors. But by some other rascals, they are being publicized as the incarnation of the Lord. But when an incarnation of the Lord appears, then the saintly people can recognize him by his form and by his activities. That is the quality of the real incarnations. They are recognized by the saintly people. But these rogues and rascals are being recognized by the fools. Saintly people do not recognize these rascals. Like we notice that most of these incarnations are flourishing in the West or in the ignorant community in India. There are so many gods nowadays. There's one god who is now rotting in the prison. He cheated so many people in America, and then finally he was exposed by his girlfriend, his secretary. And they got into a bitter fight. So these are the people, those who are being recognized as God nowadays. But if there is an incarnation of the Lord, then his devotees will recognize him. The true devotees. And the most important thing to consider in this respect is that in the age of Kali, there is no incarnation of Krishna. That's why Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya did not accept Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at first as an incarnation. Because he says, when he was told that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who was a very learned scholar, he said, how is it possible in the age of Kali, there is no incarnation of the Lord? Then, of course, he was told, or he was pointed out, that it is a wrong concept to think that there is no incarnation of the Lord in the age of Kali, but he incarnates in a covered way, channo kalu. The Lord incarnates covering his identity. That is, Krishna comes as a devotee. And then when Gopinath Acharya presented those points with scriptural proofs, then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya began to consider that. But still he was not convinced. He thought these people are just a bunch of sentimentalists. But then there was a discussion between him and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and through that scriptural discussion, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was first defeated by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and then he could understand that this must be the Lord himself. Otherwise, how is it possible that a person has such wisdom? Because Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he explained one shloka, Atma Ramascha Munayo, Nirganthopi Urukrame. That shloka in 16 different ways, and Mahaprabhu explained that shloka in 64 different ways, and not even touching those 16 points that he made. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was completely dumbfounded. He was defeated. For the first time he was defeated. And actually Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was such a great scholar that he went to Mithila. Mithila was the place where they used to study logic, a branch of Vedic wisdom known as Naya. The English word for that will be logic. So all the great logicians were studying in Mithila. And Mithila was the seat of logic, Naya Shastra. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya went to study there, study in Mithila. And in Mithila it was a custom that one could come and study, and then they have to leave. And when they leave, they cannot carry any of the scriptures. The scriptures were kept, and this system was maintained so that no one can start a school of Naya anywhere else. Just in order to keep Mithila as the place of Naya Shastra, they would not allow anyone to carry the books out of Mithila. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya went to study there. He was from Navadvip, and he went to study there. And at the end of the course, he memorized the whole scriptures. All the books were memorized by him, and then he left Mithila, came to Navadvip, then he wrote down the books, and started a school in Navadvip. And that's how Navadvip became the place of nine during Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's time. And these people, these people are so vicious, these pandits of Mithila, that they decided to kill Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And they sent some murderers, professional murderers, to kill Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And they came, and when they met Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, they were very much impressed by his personality. And they could immediately recognize that he was a very, very elevated person. So they confessed to him that they actually been sent by these pandits, the scholars of Mithila, to kill him. But now that they recognized him as a very great person, they don't want to do that. They don't want to commit such incredible sin. And then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya left Navadvip. And they warned him, they told him that, look, I mean, we may not do the duty for which we have been sent, but again, maybe in near future, some other people will be sent to kill you. So you better run away from here. So then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya left Navadvip and he went to Jagannath Puri, and he was protected by King Prataparudra. He became the Shabha Pandit, the scholar or the minister of the court, and he was protected by King Prataparudra. So we can see what a great scholar Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was. He also was a Shrutidhar. He remembered everything, what he wrote, what he read. And that's why he was very surprised when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu defeated him, because in the past no one ever defeated him. He was the greatest scholar of India in this particular subject, Vedanta, in Shariraka Bhashya of Sankaracharya. He was the greatest of India, and he was so great that although he was a householder, he used to train the sannyasis. And that's why he wanted to train Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was a Kshetra Sannyasi. Kshetra Sannyasi means one who takes a vow of living at one place, one Tirtha or a holy place, and not leave that place under any circumstances. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was a Kshetra Sannyasi. But he was such a great person that he was defeating. He was not only defeating the great scholars, but he was even training up the sannyasis. Generally, the sannyasis were considered to be the highest, but Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's position was accepted as even higher than a sannyasis. And that's why Prakashananda Saraswati in Benares got very upset when he heard that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was defeated by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because he thought it was a disgrace to the sampradaya. And so he was waiting for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to come in Benares. And when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came, Prakashananda Saraswati became very offensive to him, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu apparently was a very simple person. And Prakashananda Saraswati was a great sannyasi. He had many, many disciples, and he was very famous. He had a lot of accomplishments. So he was very proud that I am so great. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was just a young man in his 20s, a young man. And that, not only that, he was extremely beautiful, and he was not at all serious about his sannyas order. He used to dance and chant and Prakashananda Saraswati could not understand what was the matter with this person. And he was surprised that this person has defeated Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And so he felt that there must have been some foul play. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya has been
what's the word? Sarvam Bhattachari has been hypnotized, or they used to think actually that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a great magician, and he is bewildering everybody. And actually, it's true. Mahaprabhu was bewildering everybody, because Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So anybody who comes in contact with him, if he is not a devotee, is bound to get bewildered. So this is how Mahaprabhu's greatness became known all over, because Mahaprabhu defeated all the great, great scholars. So Sarvam Bhattacharya and Prakashananda Saraswati and many other great scholars who did not accept Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the beginning, after they came close to him, then they begin to recognize him as the Supreme as the Supreme Person. So the point that I was trying to make is that in the age of Kali, there is no incarnation, but only one incarnation. That is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, actually two. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and at the end of the age of Kali, the Lord will appear as Kalki Avatar to annihilate all the demons. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu predicted that he would appear in two other forms. And some people in Bengal take advantage of that. They say Mahaprabhu predicted that he'll come again in two other forms. So now they are the incarnations. Like there is one person called Jagat Bandhu. He came about 67, maybe during Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's time, in early 20th century. This man was claiming himself to be an incarnation of Mahaprabhu. And he was claiming that Mahaprabhu said that he'll come twice, so he has come. And recently, there is another rascal who claims that he is the incarnation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Anyway, there are so many rascals like that. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur pointed out that these two incarnations that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu mentioned are, one is his holy name and the other is his Bigraha, transcendental deity. So these are the two other incarnations of the Lord in this age of Kali. Besides that, in this age of Kali there is no incarnation, because Kali Yuga is so degraded that Krishna doesn't want to come in this age. Like, if Krishna doesn't want to go to the places where he is not wanted, it's a natural tendency. Like, if you don't feel wanted, why will you go there? If you don't feel welcome in some place, we don't like to be there. So the same way, Krishna doesn't like to go to the places where he is not welcomed. And that's why Krishna comes only when his devotees are there. Krishna comes just for the sake of his devotees. And that's one of the reasons why Krishna appears in India. Most of the incarnations, practically all the incarnations of Krishna is in India. Krishna incarnates in India. The reason is, India is the place where the devotees are. Krishna's devotees reside in the land of Bharatvarsha, and that's why Krishna appears there. And of course, now Krishna consciousness is spreading all over the world, and that's why Krishna is also manifesting himself there in the form of his holy name. Like Krishna's devotees, wherever Krishna's devotees get together, Krishna manifests himself in the form of his holy name. So this is how Krishna is appearing all over the world now in the form of His holy name, which is non-different from Himself. So Prabhupada is pointing out here that without these symptoms, the pretender is subject to be killed by the authorities for pretending to be an incarnation of God. Yeah, there was another, when Krishna was here, some people were pretending to be incarnations of Krishna, incarnations of Vishnu. So there was a person called Pondraka. Pondrak made two other arms, and he challenged Krishna that actually Krishna is fake and he is real. And Krishna immediately just killed him. So these demoniac people, they try to display their competitive tendency by trying to compete with the Lord, but ultimately they just become destroyed. So now we'll get into the Vaishnava etiquette lessons. One thing is that today is the Ekadasi. This Ekadasi is known as Annada Ekadasi. The glories of this Ekadasi has been described in the scriptures, and a description of when these descriptions are actually presented in the form of question and answers between Yudhishthir Maharaj and Krishna. Yudhishthir Maharaj asked Krishna what was so special about this Ekadashi, known as Annada Ekadashi or Aja Ekadashi. And the Vedic name of this Ekadashi is Aja Ekadashi, but the Vaishnav name for this Ekadashi is Annada Ekadashi. And then Krishna told him that there was a king called Harishchandra, and that king was very much influenced by the by bad time. Although he was the king of the whole earth planet, but he lost his kingdom. And not only he lost his kingdom, he even so had to sell his wife and daughter. It was actually a trick by Vishwamitra. Vishwamitra was a great sage, and he was actually a Kshatriya. Vishwamitra was a king, but through his austerities, he became a Brahmin. And he became a sage. But still, the Kshatriya qualities were in him. He used to display great anger at times. And there was a constant anger, a constant enmity between Vishwamitra and Vasishtha. Vasishtha also is a great, great sage. He was an ideal sage. And Vishwamitra and Vasishtha had some kind of enmity. And then ultimately, of course, by Vasishtha's blessings, Vishwamitra also became recognized as a great sage. But sometimes Vishwamitra displays some kind of anger. So he went to Harishchandra's palace, and he wanted Harishchandra to give him something in offerings. And in his offerings, he wanted his kingdom and an enormous amount of money. So King Harishchandra was such a truthful and such a noble king that he agreed. He said, "Yes, sure, if that pleases you, then I will. If that is what you want, yes, I will give it to you." and he offered his kingdom. And then Vishwamitra, when he was about to give him the money, then Vishwamitra said, "Wait a minute. Now you don't have any money. Like, or you have given the kingdom to me, so you can't take the money from the treasury. So now you get the money from somewhere else." And he gave him some time, which was not very long, just a day or so. So Harishchandra had to. So all he had, only thing that he could claim as his own, is his self, his wife, and his son. And then he sold his wife and his son in the marketplace. And still then it was short of something, some amount. Then finally he sold himself to a chandala. And then he offered that money to Vishwamitra. He was so truthful that the vow or the commitment that he made, he stuck to it even at the expense of selling himself. And this person who bought him was actually a chandal. And as I mentioned yesterday, chandalas are the people who burn dead bodies in crematoriums. So this man, he took Harishchandra and made him the guard of the crematorium. So when dead bodies used to be brought into the crematorium, King Harishchandra used to ask for the toll. He used to collect the money for payment for burning the bodies. And it was a very, very very heart-rending story of Harishchandra. So then Harishchandra was in the crematorium, guarding the crematorium, and from the king he became the guard of a crematorium, the most degraded of all occupations. And then one day Gautam Muni came there, or he happened to meet Gautam Muni, and he told Gautam Muni his story. Yes, seeing Gautam Muni, he immediately recognized that this person is a very, very elevated person. And actually the brahmanas are supposed to help the living entities. So he approached Gautam Muni, recognizing him as a true Brahman who knows the absolute truth, and told him about his whole story and asked him how he could become free from his sinful reactions. Maharaj Harishchandra could understand that all these are happening to him because of his past sinful activities, and he wondered how he could be rid of these sinful reactions. And Gautam Muni then told him to observe the Annada Ekadasi. And he said that you observe this Annada Ekadasi and stay up the whole night, then you'll become free from all your sinful reactions. And he said this Ekadasi is approaching within 7 days. So you prepare yourself to observe the Ekadasi. So Harishchandra, King Harishchandra did that. And then the day after he observed the Ekadasi, one lady came there at night with her dead son. The son was bitten by a snake. And this lady was so miserable, she didn't have anyone or anything. And then Harishchandra was guarding the gate of the crematorium. And when the lady came, he asked for the money to burn the body. or to use the crematorium. So the lady said that she didn't have any money. And then in the fire, in the light of the funeral pyres, the burning pyre, the fire of the burning pyres, Harishchandra could recognize this lady as his wife. And this lady could recognize Harishchandra as her husband. And this was his son, his own son. And Harishchandra said that, look, I can't let you burn the body because I am committed to the keeper of this crematorium, that whoever comes here has to pay the toll. And so Shoibha, Harishchandra's wife, said that, look, this is your own son and is dead. And, you know, she said, no, I can't. Even for the sake of my son, I cannot deviate from truth. And then Vishwamitra appeared there. And Vishwamitra said, Harishchandra, now I recognized how great you are. I heard about your greatness, but I was so proud that I used to think that I was the greatest of all kings. But now I recognize that you are far greater than I am. Saying that, he fell down at his feet. And he said, you take your kingdom back. And by his yogic power, he brought the life back to this son. Then all the demigods started to shower parijata flowers from the heavenly planets. And so King Harishchandra became free from his sinful activities by observing Annada Ekadasi. And he was reinstated in his kingdom. This story is actually, this has been described in Mahabharata. But this about this Ekadasi, it has been described in one of the Puranas. Anyway, so to go back to Vaishnava etiquette, we covered up to the fifth lessons yesterday. Today is the sixth. Sixth is etiquette within relationships, grihasthas, sannyasis, godbrothers, gurus, common people and members of other sampradayas. So I think I'll just skip it because it's not so important. I'll go over to the next one, which actually is very important. The seventh lesson is avoiding and rectifying Vaishnava aparads, how to speak to devotees and speak about them. So, the Vaishnavas are the persons, those who have surrendered themselves to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. The people, those who have dedicated themselves completely in serving Vishnu, are called Vaishnavas. And the actual identity of a Vaishnav is that he is situated in his pure spiritual identity. A Vaishnav is free from all material attachments or material influences. Our identities have two sides, the spiritual side and the material side. The body, the gross body and the subtle body are the material side of our identity, and the spirit, soul, is the spiritual identity. The actual identity is the spirit soul. But in the material platform, we become influenced by the modes of material nature, and thus we develop these two bodies, subtle body made of mind, intelligence and false ego, and the gross body made of five different gross elements. And a Vaishnav is a person who is either totally free from these material influences of gross and subtle bodies, or who is trying to become free from these influences of gross and subtle bodies and be situated in his pure spiritual identity. And that identity is revealed, spiritual identity is revealed by establishing our relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The more closely, more intimately we become related to Krishna, the more of a Vaishnav we become. The more more intimately we become connected to Krishna, the more we become free from the influence of the material nature. And a person who has become completely related to Krishna, fully related to Krishna, he is absolutely free from all material influences. So this person, Vaishnavas, are very, very dear to Krishna. The devotees of Krishna, those who are with him or those who are trying to go back to him, are very, very dear to him. So if anybody wants to go back to Krishna or develop Krishna consciousness, must guard himself, must protect himself against this, against committing any offense to the Vaishnavas. Now, to point out the position of a Vaishnava, how elevated the position of a Vaishnava is, like Lord Shiva is telling, Aradhana Nam Sharvesham Vishnur Aradhana Param. Of all the worships, the worship of Vishnu is the greatest. But Tashmat Paro Tarang Devi Tadiyanam Samarchanam. But even greater than worshipping Vishnu is the worship of the Vaishnavas. Tadiyanam. Tadiyanam means the ones, those who are his dear ones. Krishna's own people. Vishnu, Vaishnavas are Vishnu's own people, very dear ones. It's, the example can be given like if somebody is trying to please the father, then the easiest way to do it is by pleasing the son of the father. As I was mentioning also yesterday, it's very difficult to please a rich man because he has everything. But we can very easily please the son of the rich man by just giving him a bar of chocolate or a candy. The boy is happy just by getting a candy, and then he's so happy he goes to his father. The father, he gave me a candy. He's such a nice man. And the father immediately becomes favorably disposed to the man who pleased his son. So this is the easiest way to please Vishnu. So that's why it has been said that Aradhananam Sarvesham, of all the Aradhanas, of all the worships, Vishnu's worship is the greatest, but even greater than that is the worship of Vishnu's devotees. Now, if we reverse that point, it is easiest to please Krishna, it's very easy to please Krishna by pleasing his devotees. Now, if we offend Krishna's devotees, then we can well imagine what is going to happen. Like, if a person is very influential, very rich, and if somebody offends or does something to his son, what he will do? He will take it as a greater offense than the offense to himself. So that's why it is Vaishnava Apara that displeases Krishna the most. Now, who is a Vaishnav? Regarding that, there are some shlokas in different scriptures. One is Chandalopi Muneshreshto Vishnu Bhakti Parayanaha. Vishnu Bhakti Dihinastu Dijo Opi Shapachadhamaha. It is said, Chandalopi mune shreshto Vishnu bhakti parayana. If a chandal becomes a devotee of Vishnu, then he becomes even greater than the brahmanas, even greater than the greatest brahmanas. Chandalopi mune shreshto. Muni are the philosophically inclined. So that is a very, very elevated position. And he's saying that a chandal, if he becomes a devotee of Vishnu, then he becomes even greater than the munis. But Vishnu bhakti bihinostu, but if a Brahmin is devoid of devotion to Vishnu, then he is even worse than a chandal. So this way we can see that the position of a Vaishnava is the highest, and if somebody did not develop any love for Krishna, devotion for Krishna, then no matter how elevated he is, he becomes the lowest. Sometimes these Vedic quotes are very heavy. People cannot really tolerate that, especially the non-devotees. They cannot understand why Vedas are giving such heavy injunctions. But the point is, unless the statement is made in a heavy way, these fools won't be able to understand. It's kind of literally driving it through their head. Another shloka says, Vishnu bhakti vihina je chandala parikirtita chandalopi vaishreshta hari bhakti parayana. This is also has the same meaning. If one is devoid of devotion, then he is considered to be a chandal. But if one becomes a devotee of Hari, then although he may be born in a chandala family, he becomes the greatest of all people. Then another shloka is saying, Name priyas chaturvedi madbhakta shapacha priya tasmai deyang tato grajyam sacha pujya jatha aham. Name priya chaturvedi. Krishna is telling, Krishna is telling Uddhava in 11th canto, that name priya chaturvedi. If somebody is an expert in all the four Vedas, if one has learned all the four Vedas but is not a devotee of mine, he is not at all dear to me. But if somebody is born in a chandala or dog eater's family, he becomes my dear one if he becomes my devotee, or when he becomes my devotee. And he's instructing, Tashmoy Deyam, offering should be made to him, instructions should be taken from him, and he should be worshipped as I am worshipped. So this is how Krishna is establishing the very, very elevated position of a Vaishnava. Then another one is saying, Madbhakta jatra gacchanti tatra gacchanti parthiva bhaktanam anugacchanti muktaya shruti bhishaha. Krishna is telling, wherever my devotees go, my dear Arjuna, I also go there with them. Wherever my devotees are, I am always with them. And bhaktanam anugacchanti muktaya shruti bhishaha. And the liberation personified along with the Vedas follow the devotees wherever they go. Shomipe tishthati jasya hi anto kaleopi vaishnava gacchante paramang sthanam jadyapi brahmaha bhavet. That is also a very nice shloka. And it says, now what to talk about Vaishnava's becoming liberated themselves. You see, if at the time of somebody's death, if a Vaishnava is present, then even if the person is such a sinner that he killed a Brahmin or does the most abominable activities, even he goes back to Godhead. If Vaishnava is present at the time of death of somebody, then no matter how sinful that person is, he goes back to Vaikuntha. Gacchate paramang sthanam. Paramang sthanam means absolute position. So this is how elevated the position of a Vaishnava is. That just by being present at the time of death of a sinner, he can deliver him. Then from Bhagavad Gita says, Manghi partha vappa shritta jyopishu papo janaya striyo vaishyas tatha shudra stepi janti parangatim. That Krishna, if somebody takes shelter of me, then it doesn't really matter if he is born in a sinful family or got a sinful birth. Like woman, Vaishya and Shudra, then he also attains the absolute position, Parangotim. Also from Bhagavad Gita, says, Opichet Suduracharo Bhajate Mam Ananna Bhak Sadhu Reva Samantabha Sammak Vyavahita Sha. That if somebody is very, very opichet suduracharo bhajate mam ananna bhak. Krishna is telling that if somebody serves me with unflinching faith and without deviation, then even if he becomes fallen, suduracharo, even if he becomes a miscreant, he should be considered to be a sadhu. He should be considered to be a great devotee, great person. Now from Srimad Bhagavatam, Noishang Moti, Prahlad Maharaj is telling his father Hiranyakashipu, Noishang Moti Stabo Durukramangring, Sprishatta Nartha Pogamo Jadartha, Mohi Ashang Pado Rajobhi Shekham, Nishkin Chananang Na Brinita Javat. That unless and until one is blessed by the dust of the lotus feet, unless and until one is coronated, abhishekam, or bathed by the lotus feet of a Vaishnava, nishkinchananang, a pure devotees of the Lord, no matter how much he studied the Vedas or how expert he is in performing austerities and observing vows, he cannot make any advancement. So this is how elevated the position of a Vaishnava is. So when a person becomes aware of the position of a Vaishnava, then automatically he guards himself against committing any offense. Actually, Vaishnava of aparads or offenses to the Vaishnavas are committed simply because they do not know the position of the Vaishnava, the elevated position of a Vaishnava. So when one recognizes the elevated position of a Vaishnava, then he automatically becomes careful not to commit any offense. And there are some more that says, those who worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead but do not worship the devotees is not at all a devotee. He is simply puffed up. When a Vaishnava comes to the house, then he should be received by words like, today I have been blessed because the darshan of a Vaishnava is... because today I have got your darshan, and the darshan of a Vaishnava is as rare as getting the darshan of Vishnu. I must have acquired heaps of pious activities in the past. Then if someone ill-treats a Vaishnava, then he loses all his piety. Actually, that's what happens when one mistreats a Vaishnava or offends a Vaishnava, then he loses all his pious activities. And in the story of Ambarish Maharaj, Prabhupada pointed out that one has to be very, very careful not to commit offense to Vaishnavas, because Durvasa was a very great sage, but he offended a Vaishnava, Ambarish Maharaj. Although Vaishnavas don't take offense, but Krishna doesn't tolerate the offense to a Vaishnava. So, and because of Krishna's wrath, Krishna's anger, the offenders are destroyed. Generally, a Vaishnava doesn't take offense, but Krishna takes the offense. So that's why Vaishnava Aparad is so dangerous. And it has been said that if somebody commits a Vaishnava Aparad, then actually the door back to Vaikuntha becomes closed forever for him. So one must be very, very careful not to commit offenses to Vaishnavas. And also it has been pointed out that when a Vaishnava is offended, not only he loses his good qualities, but if he is practicing devotional service, then he falls down from his devotional platform. And this is also a point to consider, that when the argument comes up, you know, how a living entity becomes envious of Krishna. If it is so wonderful to be with Krishna, then how does a living entity become envious to Krishna? The answer to that is, actually the living entity doesn't necessarily become directly offensive to Krishna in the spiritual sky. But they become offensive to a Vaishnava, Krishna's devotees. And if they become offensive to a Vaishnava, then he falls down. Because Krishna takes that offense very, very seriously. So the most often we also notice in our society, in the society of Vaishnavas, many devotees bloop, as we call it. Many devotees leave the movement. And actually the reason behind their fall down is their offense to Vaishnavas, their offenses to the Vaishnavas. So if one is serious about going back to Godhead, then he can be very, very, he should become very, very careful not to commit any offense to the Vaishnavas. And also we must be careful, because sometimes familiarity breeds contempt. And we think that, what's so big about, what's so great about him? He is not an advanced devotee. He is just a neophyte. And we tend to commit offenses, but we have to be very, very careful. That everybody should be treated rather carefully, because we do not really know how advanced one is. Because from outside one cannot recognize a Vaishnava. Like we know the story of Jarabharat. Although he was a pure devotee, apparently he looked like a dumb fool. And so people are prone to make offenses to him. But actually he was a pure devotee. But from outside, we couldn't figure out who he was. Nobody could make out who he was, or how elevated his position was. He looked more like a retarded person who couldn't think straight, who was stupid. But in the inside, he was a pure devotee. There are so many examples like that. We don't even have to go that far. Even in the recent past, we know the stories of different great Vaishnava acharyas, like Madhavendra Puri. If we saw Madhavendra Puri, apparently he would appear to be like a beggar to us. He didn't display any glamour whatsoever. He must have appeared to be like an ordinary beggar. But he is one of the greatest of all Vaishnavas of all times. His disciple was the guru of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he was such an elevated devotee that he would not even beg from houses. Even he would not beg for the sake of his food. But when he was like that, he was leading a life like that, that he would not beg, then Krishna came himself and gave him milk to drink. So we can well imagine how elevated his position is. Even in more recent past, we have seen that how Prabhupada was not recognized by the Vaishnavas around him, by the people around him. And I often feel that many of those people, though although they were situated in the Vaishnava platform, they could not really make any progress because of their offenses to Srila Prabhupada. A pure devotee, an eternal associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, came to bless this world. But they, as I said, familiarity breeds contempt. They became contemptuous towards Prabhupada. And they offended Prabhupada. Although Prabhupada didn't take offense, but Krishna took offense. And that's why many of them lost their spiritual life, and many of them are just stagnating wherever they are. They were complaining to Prabhupada. They came challenging Prabhupada. Why are you using the name Prabhupada? But they did not recognize that the work that Srila Prabhupada done, the greatest of all time, the work that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself did not accomplish, Prabhupada did it. I'm sure Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would not hesitate to offer him the greatest glorification. But these people, they were challenging him. Why are you using the title Prabhupada? And anyway, so it is very, it is good to be careful about dealing with the Vaishnavas. We should not think that they are ordinary people and just offend them even unknowingly. Even in our thoughts, we should not offend our Vaishnavas. But at the same time, to be in a society, we do become familiar with each other. But in that familiar mood, we can have frank discussions and frank exchanges without any malice. Like, if we don't like somebody's behavior, we can go and tell him straightforward, in a straightforward way, that, Prabhu, why are you behaving like this? And especially the people, those who are in leadership or those who are in management, for the sake of the society, for the sake of Prabhupada's movement, sometimes they have to correct people. But that should be done with an attitude of service, not with a mood of enjoyment. We must understand that when we chastise somebody, we actually give him our sukriti. Our transcendental piety is transmitted to him. Actually, karma is very much like, karma's movement of flow is like the movement of electricity or water. Water flows from higher level to lower level. And if there is any contact between lower and higher levels of water, then there will be, the water will find its level, water will come to a level. The high water will give out and the low water will rise, and then ultimately they will become equal. So when we deal with people favorably, when we are favorably connected to senior Vaishnavas, then we acquire their good qualities. But if we are unfavorably connected, then we lose our good qualities. Like if somebody unnecessarily criticizes or blasphemes, then actually all his piety is lost, because he is actually making a contact between himself and that other person. And through that contact, he becomes, he loses all the charges. Like electricity has a typical tendency that positively charged electricity, as soon as it comes in contact with earth, then it loses all the charge. It becomes neutralized. The same way, if somebody is unfavorably connected to a Vaishnava, that is, he offends him or blasphemes him, then he loses all his good qualities or pious activities. So that's why it has been described, or it has been instructed, that our behavior should be, we should always try to be connected to some senior Vaishnava. In Bhagavatam, it says, what's the shloka? Shajati ashaya snigdha sadhu sango tato bare. How one should associate, what kind of association one should seek? Shajatiya, it should be of the same kind. Like we are Gaudiya Vaishnavas, so our tendency should be to associate with the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. That is the same family, Shajatiya, belonging to the same family. And Snigdha, that personality should be very peaceful, very composed, not agitating or agitated. Shajatiya Ashaya Snigdha Sadhu Sangha, the association of the sadhu, Shato Bore, and he should be superior in his position. So that is what we must seek for. That's the kind of association everyone must seek in order to make advancement. So of course our society is a wonderful society. Here we have the most elevated Vaishnav, Srila Prabhupada, in the center, and around Srila Prabhupada we have so many other wonderful Vaishnavas. And if we are favorably disposed, if we are favorably connected to them, then very easily we can go back to Godhead. But if we are not favorably disposed to them, then we won't last for very long. Like so many devotees have left the movement, and we cannot afford to be sentimental about it. And to be practical, the reason is they have offended the other Vaishnavas. And due to the offense, they fell down. They lost their opportunity to remain in the platform of Vaishnavas. And it has also been said that the preliminary outcome of Vaishnava aparad is material opulence. When one offends Vaishnavas, the immediate thing that happens is that he gets a lot of material name and fame. And that actually secures the grip of Maya. And through that, Maya gradually grabs him. So, anyway, we should be very, very careful not to commit offenses. And when you speak to a Vaishnav, we should be very respectful. And when you speak about a Vaishnav, then also we should be very careful not to talk bad things behind the Vaishnav's back. So, So, I stop now. Thank you all very much. Does anybody have any question? Yeah. That's a good point. It's also been mentioned that when you are serving a senior Vaishnava or more advanced Vaishnava, right, then in order to protect his interest, one can take the risk of committing offense to a less advanced Vaishnava, right? So now we are serving Prabhupada, right? We are trying to protect Prabhupada's movement. And if somebody is creating disturbance to Prabhupada's movement, then we can speak out loud that it is wrong, and we can also tell people that what these people are doing is wrong. Right? So that risk, especially the preachers can take and have to take. At a time like this, we cannot say, well, they are also doing all right and we are also carrying on when they are causing a great damage to Prabhupada's movement. That shouldn't be done.
But should we consider them also as Vaishnavas?
Well, when we see, I mean, yes, they also should be considered as Vaishnavas, right? But they are causing some disturbance to our society. And as a matter of fact, although we may consider them as Vaishnavas, or we should consider them as Vaishnavas, but I do not know for how long Krishna will consider them as Vaishnavas. So I better to leave it up to Krishna. And actually that's what happened. Like many devotees, those who apparently were great Vaishnavas, Krishna did not really consider them to be Vaishnavas. Or Krishna didn't consider that they were behaving like Vaishnavas, so Krishna chastised them. So, especially when we are preaching, like I have to do that. When people ask me about New Vrindavan, I give them my opinion. Because I know, at least I am convinced in my heart, that they are not following Prabhupada's instructions. They are not pleasing Prabhupada. Prabhupada's most important instruction was, your cooperation for me will show how much you love me. So, but they are not cooperating. Then there's so many efforts, so many endeavors have been made to cooperate with them or try to cooperate with them. But they just don't want to cooperate. So will that please Prabhupada? And if Prabhupada is not pleased, will they be able to last for very long? No.
Clearly was deviating from his instruction. And one thing I don't understand is why after he put it in such a position as a spiritual master.
Well, one way to think of it is why Prabhupada did things, it's beyond us. We do not understand. And personally, I have noticed Prabhupada did not want to name people as acharyas or who would become the acharyas. But ultimately, when Prabhupada saw that there was no solution to that, then Prabhupada named some people, first three, then eight, and then 10, and then 11. So this is how Prabhupada named 11 persons. But besides that, Prabhupada told many other devotees that they can initiate, although Prabhupada did not mention their names as. And at some certain point, Prabhupada told that some leading devotees are very very eager to become gurus. But that mood is, that tendency is not right, that tendency is not proper. So Prabhupada said that. So, naming Kirtananda, Prabhupada gave them a chance, like the way Prabhupada gave us Brahmin initiation. That doesn't mean that we became Brahmins, because we've been initiated as a Brahmin, but Prabhupada gave us a chance to become a Brahmin. So same way Prabhupada gave some devotees a chance to become gurus. But then it was up to them whether they would behave like a guru or not. And if they did not behave like a guru, they fell down. Right?
Actually, someone asked this question to Prabhupada also. So because you know everything, you know everyone in the movement, still sometimes you give responsibility to those who actually later on misuse. And Prabhupada said, yeah, because everyone is marginal. The marginal energy of the Lord, you can either use it for Krishna service or for personal sense gratification.
Yeah.
There's always the opportunity.
Mm-hmm. And I also, I think that 2 years ago, he said, whatever good the unity is, wherever it is, he's always in marginal position, wherever it is. He's still to rule the world, wherever it is.
Yeah.
So we discussed it later that point, and ultimately, it's very good to conceive for, because actually, a bird hadn't made a conscious effort to awaken his devotion, so it was inconceivable as much as And so, again, point to be brought up.
Making any endeavor.
No, there's so many contradictions to be found in philosophy. If anything, at the end, you know, we discuss and it comes to some conclusion, and then we find a contradiction, and then combine what is inconceivable.
Yes, because we are dealing with an inconceivable nature, right? So things that is inconceivable, how can you conceive it, right? Things that are beyond our sense perception, how can you bring it to the grasp of your senses? It's not possible. So ultimately you actually have to depend on that inconceivable aspect of the spiritual nature. Like, I mean, because it, you, I mean, you cannot justify it by any logic, by any material example or by any material, justification. It cannot be justified because you are dealing with a totally different nature, right? Like for instance, when you are talking about light in relation to water, through water you can display some of the characteristics of light, right? Or explain some of the characteristics of light. But light is a totally different energy, so that cannot be defined by or through water, the characteristics of water. So we are trying to, you know, analyze the spiritual nature with our material experiences. It's not possible. So ultimately we have to give up that, well, that's a totally different nature, and the laws of that nature are beyond this material laws. No, not empty. If you receive those instructions with due faith, and then the understandings will be revealed.
Salt and jump out of the graves, and the means is going to return to the
Well,
it's inconceivable.
Yeah. Does this philosophy impress you? Yes, no, I'm just asking. I mean, if it doesn't impress you, I mean, it's not the same kind of philosophy like Bhagavad Gita is presenting, right? When you read Bhagavad Gita, you find immediately there's a difference between this philosophy and Jehovah's Witnesses philosophy, right? I mean, Christian philosophy is not actually very elevated philosophy. You know, it is, go to think of it, to what kind of people Jesus was preaching. Jesus was preaching to a bunch of, illiterate, semi-barbaric nomads, yeah, or, you know, like the people from Middle East. So he did not really present it in a very, very elevated way, because he himself said, I have much more to say, but you all won't be able to understand it. And on top of that, Jesus' teachings have been thoroughly distorted with time by all kinds of unscrupulous people, right? So what you are seeing about what Christianity is appearing to be like today is quite different from what Jesus presented it when he was present, right? Whereas Bhagavad Gita was presented to the most intelligent class of people, right? By the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Of course, I won't say that Jesus' teachings and Krishna's teachings are different. Jesus also came and gave the same message. But obviously there's a difference in presentation. And on top of everything, Bhagavad Gita is totally intact, kept absolutely intact. It hasn't been, not even a single word has been distorted. So that's why what is presented in Bhagavad Gita appeals to the most intelligent class of people. And you see, the activity of the highest intelligence and the activity of a fool apparently may appear to be alike sometimes. Like the sunrise and sunset appears to be alike, because the diametrically opposites are alike in a way. So in the extreme, in the absolute intelligence, you surrender your intelligence, right? And simply receive on the mercy, right? So that is the work of the highest intelligence. And diametrically opposite to that is the stupidity of a fool. There, he doesn't have the ability to use his intelligence. One doesn't have the ability to use intelligence, but the other one, he voluntarily surrenders his intelligence. So the intelligence, you know, stops to act, but that doesn't mean that both are alike or both are similar. Does it convince you? No? I think now you have to surrender your intelligence.
There's an also by this argument you could say that every fool could say anything and say it's inconceivable. But then, how can you apply this little argument by the whole Vaishnava philosophy? That's quite, it's not really a whole argument.
Yeah, no, that's the point. Like, When you are dealing with the subject that is beyond your sense perception, and at that, to reach that region, you have to give up your intelligence, because your intelligence is a product of your senses, right? Your senses are collecting information, they are stored in the mind, and intelligence is using them, right? But when you are dealing with a nature which is beyond your sense perception, what can you do with your intelligence? So it is better to say, well, I cannot use it in that region, so might as well stop using it. And then you develop another kind of intelligence that is provided by Krishna, Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam. It is not that you become a fool, But you develop your spiritual intelligence. Your intelligence begins to grow in the other direction, in the spiritual direction. And that intelligence enables you to perceive the spiritual nature. Now, to confirm that point, I'll say that consider all our acharyas, right? I mean, undoubtedly, they were the most intelligent people, the wisest of all people, right? Consider Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami, Narottam Das Thakur, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Baladev Vidya Bhushan, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. And they are not very far away, you know, in last few hundred years. But they were the greatest of all wise men. And now you consider the acharyas of Jehovah's Witness. You know, you'll find, you know, drunkards, rapists, you know, all kinds of, you know, perverts. Now, I'm just saying, you know, like, so, to receive the knowledge, you consider the person first. Who is the person who is giving the knowledge? Look at his character, what he is like. And if the person if his character is not immaculate, then obviously his presentation also will not be immaculate. But at least, you know, we have that assurance in our parampara, that every single acharya that we have in our parampara are, you know, immaculate personalities. Prabhupada, we have seen ourselves. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, not very far away. Bhakti Vinod Thakur, such personalities, and look at their accomplishments. Look at their writings. So sell yourself to the right master, then you won't go wrong. But if you sell yourself to a wrong master, then no matter how intelligent you are, you will end up a loser. I think I'll take Gangadhar Prabhu's.
Krishna's father's question says, there was a similarity between the way Jesus Christ appears and Krishna appears. Does it mean that Jesus is a manifestation of Krishna?
Well, obviously Jesus had a very close connection with Krishna. Jesus is a devotee of Krishna. Or as Jesus himself said, he is the son of Krishna. Yes, regarding that, Prabhupada said that even if offenses are committed in ignorance or in innocence, still the consequences are there, the reactions are there. Like even if a child puts his hand in fire, the hand burns, right? But when it is innocent, then the reaction is not that intense or that that effective. It's less effective. But if it is done voluntarily, with knowing, then it is very, very heavy. They're getting heaps of all the sin is taking shelter in the grains, all the sins of the world, and they are eating those grains. So although apparently they may be a sinless person, but just by taking grains on Ekadasi, they are committing so many sins.
So when we have guests from Kaji, should we always avoid drinking
grains? Yes, because it has been said that when a person inspires others to observe Ekadasi, then they also get the benefit. And if somebody knowingly offers grain, then he actually also gets the reactions. If you know that something is bad, say for instance, if you know that something is poison, and knowingly, knowing well that this is poison, if you give it to somebody, then will not the state punish you? Now, why did you give him poison? Because different ekadasis are signifying different